a proposal has been made to the law enforcement assistance people under the Law Enforcement Assistance Act of 1965 for a police school liaison program in the junior high schools. It would put five juvenile officers and to be supervised by a lieutenant in juvenile vision, Bill Shaughnessy, to work in the junior highs and build up liaison with the school people and with kids that are getting into trouble and that we have been come in contact with in our day-to-day operation of the juvenile division. The superintendent of schools, Dr. Rufus A. Putnam, originally had quite a bit of opposition to the program, but he visited Flint, Michigan, where this program has been in operation, and he changed his mind, and eventually the school board okayed the officer plan, and the program worked out very well in the schools over the years, and the schools found it very helpful to have a police officer in the schools. And as the years went by, in later years, the program was expanded and increased and became a regular thing in all of Minneapolis schools. Having an officer in the school to handle any unusual incidents of violence, drug activity, and that kind of thing was found to be very helpful for school people. They weren't equipped to take enforcement action against individuals, which is needed in some of these cases. The program was very successful and continues to this day in most cities. On page 17 in scrapbook 5 are some articles about a couple suicides we had in the city jail, and the Central Liberties Union was going to investigate. We find that this organization is very eager and tries to get into every possible investigation they can of the police department. They seem to feel that the department is constantly violating the civil rights and constitutional rights of prisoners all the time. And it's been my experience that this isn't the case. They seem to go overboard in these types of investigations. They seem to be biased, in my opinion. I know that one of the executive directors of the Civil Liberties Union's sister had been raped by a black man. And I found that this particular individual was extremely biased and wanted the suspect vigorously prosecuted, and to the extent that would be probably violations of his civil and constitutional rights. So when the situation hits close to home, I find that these individuals want extreme enforcement of the law. On page 17 in scrapbook 5, there are some articles reporting on the possible use of meter maids or non-sworn personnel to check parking meters. This was the first instance in Minneapolis of this type of suggestion. In the past, all the meter enforcement was done by sworn personnel on radio equipped three-wheel motorcycles in the downtown area, and in some other more outlying areas. I found that these individuals could be called upon to answer calls and fill in an emergency, so I wasn't convinced that meter maids was the answer in this situation. This was the beginning of this trend towards the use of civilian personnel in police departments, and it continued down through the years, and now many positions in the police department used to be formally filled by injured on duty officers or other sworn personnel who for some reason had to be kept off the streets and inside. And it worked out pretty well because we had a place to put individuals that needed this type of duty, light duty, for a while. Later on, of course, all these positions were filled by civilian personnel, and probably increased the amount of personnel, sworn personnel, that could be that would be used in regular police duties. And this is the practice in all departments nowadays at the present time. On page 20, 21, 22, 23, and 24 in scrapbook 5 was a article and pictures giving the training and what goes on in the 10-week rookie school in the Minneapolis Police Department. And good publicity for the department, and it showed that our officers are being trained in as well as we are able to do it under present finances and so forth. On pages 26, 27, 28, 29, 30 and 31 are articles showing the departments getting into politics more and more, and how the job as chief of police was very political, and how the various aldermen, legislators, and others were constantly going to the media and trying to embarrass the department or to get their 2 cents in politically in order to assist them in their political aims. In Minneapolis at this time, Mayor Nathlin was a Democratic mayor, and he was in a political fight and with members of the opposition, Republican others who opposed Nathlin politically within the Democratic Party. And it put the police department and me as chief in the middle, because the two sides were fighting back and forth and trying to hit at each other, particularly from the city council side, by working on my budget and trying to reduce it in order to hit back at Mayor Nathlin, who had appointed me originally as chief of police. And this was a bad situation, and it was a constant annoyance and hindrance, at the very least, in my opinion. And eventually, I decided to get out of the Minneapolis Police Department, mainly for that reason. On page 30, there is a program that took place on May 20th, 1966 in the City Hall Rotunda. It was a Memorial Day program during Police Week to honor officers killed in the line of duty. This was held every year afterwards. During Police Week, to honor officers who had been killed in the line of duty. The president of the Police Officers Federation of Minneapolis was Charles Stenvig, who later became a mayor in Minneapolis. He used the Federation and its program in various ways to further his political advantage and publicity to keep his name in front of the public. Within the department, some officers thought he was a little bit wild and too unstable to represent them, but he was elected president, and on the whole, it did a pretty good job. I knew him very well because he was raised out in the neighborhood where I lived as a young fellow. And he was a close friend of my brother Charles. They both came on the department in about the same time, and they were close friends, neighborhood buddies when they were growing up. And when my brother Charles married, well, Charlie Stenvig was his best man. So Charlie Stenvig and I personally got along very well, though politically, and because I was superintendent of the police, he was, of course, in conflict with me and some of my aims during discussions and events involving police personnel. Pages 33, 34, and 35, there were articles concerning the attendance of some of the brass of the Minneapolis Police Department to the FBI National Academy retraining session held in Kansas City, Missouri. I attended along with Inspector Donald R. Dwyer, Wayne Sherman, Deputy Inspectors Ray Peterson, and Carl Pearson. This was a type of program where officers who had attended the FBI National Academy met and received further training and had a chance to network with other police officials throughout the country from the Section 2, which was the Midwest area of the country. Page 36, 37, 38 and 39 are articles concerning the residence rule. The Minnesota Supreme Court upheld the residence rule, and the officers are required to live in the city when employed by the Minneapolis Police Department. In later years, this was overturned, and officers were able to live outside the city. And then in the last year or two, 1994 and 95, there is a lot of agitation to have officers live within the city again. And I believe all new recruits now are required to live in within the city limits. So what goes around comes around, I guess. On page 37, there's an article about the Federation wanting to be involved in discipline of individuals when the officer is being disciplined by me as superintendent of police. They want to have a officer of the Federation or a member of the Federation present in order to assist the officer who is going to be disciplined. This, of course, in my opinion at the time, interfered quite drastically with my ability to take disciplinary action. I could see where if a strong, autocratic, unreasonable type of chief of police were leading the department, where this might be desirable, but in my case, I thought I handled the disciplinary problems in a fair, constructive way, considering the rights of the individual and the rights of the rest of the officers in the police department and the citizens of Minneapolis to have a well-disciplined department that was led fairly and would take, and a superintendent or chief of police who would take action when it was merited in disciplinary type matters. On page 40 of scrapbook 5, there's an article about the retirement of Lieutenant Stan Hurley from the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office. He was a detective in the Sheriff's Office for many years, and I had many contacts with him and worked on cases together. He was an outstanding individual, and I liked him very much. We used to help him out a lot, because the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office didn't have any police stenographers available during night hours. And so when he needed to take a statement from a suspect or witnesses, we would help him out by working on the case with him and then using our Minneapolis police stenographers to take statements that he needed in his cases. He was a very excellent detective, the type of individual that I like to call a policeman's policeman. And he was missed after his retirement. He had many, many contacts and was able to produce a lot of information about activity around the county and within the city of Minneapolis. Also on page 40 in scrapbook 5, there is an article about the questioning of suspects. County Attorney George M. Scott put out some guidelines for use by police concerning giving him the information that he has a right to remain silent, and anything he says can be used as evidence against him in the court. And he has a right to consult an attorney and have the lawyer with him during interrogation. And if he is indigent or unable to provide an attorney, that a lawyer will be appointed to represent him. This was the start of a lot of court decisions that interfere drastically with the way police personnel had operated in the past. When suspects were interrogated and that sort of thing. And it handicapped the officers. In my mind, I felt that way anyway. And on pages 42, 43, there is some articles about seven people arrested in a Vietnam War protest at 7th and Hennepin. We were aware that this demonstration was going to take place, and we had officers covering it, and I went down there myself, and arrests were made for breach of the peace and failure to have a flag properly displayed in any public meeting of over 10 persons on the public street. The flag is supposed to be displayed. And this wasn't the case in this instance, so arrests were made. 44, there are some articles about taxes to hire more policemen, and council head criticizes police chief. And this was more of the political infighting that went on during these years when Naftalin and members of the opposition were fighting against each other, or at least discussing, making comments about one another, and the police chief was in the middle again. And this was a very undesirable type of situation, and caused me a lot of problems and what have you. On page 45, there's an article about a confession was played at the Senate inquiry. This concerns the John F. Byron case, where a Mrs. Ann Danielski was killed in North Minneapolis in 1962. And a professor Yale Camisar, who was at the University of Minnesota at the time of this crime, and got a copy of a tape made of the interrogation, and he was later at the University of Michigan Law School, and he played this tape constantly to various law school classes and used it. To the nth degree, and I didn't have much. Much use for this Yale Camisar. He is a way out, mushy-headed liberal, in my opinion, and was using this to further his political ambitions and his opinions about guarantees of rights of suspects and so forth. Pages 46, 47, and 48 in Scrapbook 5, there are more articles concerning the Vietnam protesters rally at 7th and Hennepin and the arrests made in that instance. It was in the public press for several days. Both for and against our actions at the scene. On pages 48, 49, 50, 51, 52, 53, and 54, our application blanks, articles, pictures, other memorabilia that I brought back from with me when I attended Harvard University School of Business for 3 weeks to receive additional training. The top 40 continuation of the my comments on the 40 police chiefs' attendance at Harvard University School of Business for 3 weeks in the summer of 1966. The top 40 police chiefs attended classes every day. Classes were taught by various professors from School of Business, School of Public Administration, and other schools at Harvard University. At Harvard, they used the case method of teaching, and it took a little getting used to before you began to grasp what they were driving at, but by the time the course was over, it was, I thought it was a very good method. During the weekends, evenings, and other times out of school, we were entertained very well, went out to dinner several times, where attended a get-together at the home of the owner of the Wall Street Journal, and then went to, we were at his home where we had a short cocktail hour, and then went over to a restaurant, Hugo's in Cohasset, which is located right across the bay from the home of the owner of the Wall Street Journal. And we enjoyed ourselves very much. Saw the Kennedy residence and all that sort of thing. And but the big important thing that I found and benefit I found from attending the course was the chance to talk to all the other police chiefs and discuss problems that we were having in the department and in their departments, and to try and exchange, and did exchange, experiences and things that had worked in their department. And it was very helpful, and I learned an awful lot. On pages 55, 56, and 57 are articles concerning a civil disturbance on Plymouth Avenue. This took place while I was down at Harvard, and I called back to the city and talked to the mayor, and Inspector Dwyer had been in charge of the scene, and it was being handled, and he didn't think I had to come back. And it would have been almost impossible because the airlines were on strike at this time, and I would have been unable to get back unless some private plane was sent or some way that I could travel back by automobile. But he didn't think it was necessary. This was the first civil disturbance and the start of what later was to be other disturbances in the next summer and the summer following that. During these disturbances, there were several business places on Plymouth Avenue that were looted, and eventually a lot of the Caucasian businessmen moved out, and in a future disturbance and riot, a supermarket was burnt down, and this resulted in Plymouth Avenue becoming wasteland, to some extent at least, and all that happened was that all the blacks burnt out all the stores, or caused all the stores that they did business with to move out, and they were left with no place to do shopping and conduct business that were formerly there along Plymouth Avenue. And this resulted in a lot of hardship for a lot of families and older people and what have you in the community. On pages 60 and 61 are pictures of Lieutenant Wishart and where he's receiving a donations from the Chamber of Commerce and from the Honeywell local union in order to send him down to the long course at Northwestern Traffic Institute. Lieutenant Wishart was sent down there, and on his return he became training director for the Minneapolis Police Department and was active in planning and assisting the traffic division with his expertise that he had learned down at Northwestern University Traffic Institute. On page 63 are some articles about our recruit program and the fact that we've been having difficulty getting enough applicants for police jobs, I think this was a result of some of the derogatory publicity about police and the kind of climate of rebellion in the country at large, where police were looked down upon, called pigs, and because of their actions in the various Vietnam demonstrations and other disturbances around the country. On pages 65, 66, 67, 68, and 69, are articles in Scrapbook 5. There are articles concerning our difficulties in the political infighting about manpower increases and Naflin seeking more police, city council, also seeking more police, and about unusually high number of city police quitting, and the reduction in requirements. We lowered the height and age requirements, and this brought out some criticism from the Police Federation. But we needed the candidates, applicants for patrolmen, and that was necessary. I think we will pay the price, and it later proved out that we did, in poorer quality candidates who later got into difficulties disciplinary-wise and for other reasons that caused them to be discharged or reprimanded and disciplinary action taken against them. We need the top people, those with the best requirements to become applicants for patrolmen in order to have an efficient, well-trained, efficient department. On page 73, Scrapbook 5, there's a program for our annual police commendations ceremony. I was a strong promoter of this program commended officers as often as I could, given the facts and circumstances of a particular exceptional piece of police work. I leaned over backwards to pass out commendations, and believed that this was a very effective way of building morale and giving credit where credit is due. There is a danger of going overboard and giving out too many or for incidents or pieces of police work that were not of sufficient quality, where other members of the department would look down on the awards. But if the quality was kept up, I think this is a very effective program, and I supported it due to this day. I think men, when they do an excellent piece of police work, should be commended and recognized publicly and by the department. On page 75, 76, and 77, plus page 78, there are articles concerning the Morrow Squad and Alderman Greenstein up in the north side criticizing the Morrow Squad and the prostitution efforts that they make constantly to keep that situation under control and eliminate it if possible. This is another of the type of political harassment that takes place when you have a mayor and the councilman fighting one another, and then the police department is in between the two factions or two sides, and it just causes a lot of problems for the department. On pages 76, 77, and 78, there's some information about Cushman police vehicles. I was interested in getting and putting beat men, walking beat men, in communication with the dispatchers so that more use could be made of them for answering requests for service and to for them to respond to emergencies in their particular area. These Cushman police vehicles, I thought, would do this, as they would be radio equipped. They are enclosed, and the beat men would be out of the inclement weather and would be able to cover a lot more territory. And we purchased a number of them and used them for several years until finally the Police Federation was able to eliminate them, using the argument that they were unsafe when they became involved in collisions or any other type of accident or incident where the officer could be injured because of being in a vehicle that wasn't strong enough or safe enough to protect him from injury or death. In scrapbook 5, pages 79, 80, 81, 82, and 83, 84, and 85, there is clippings and comments in the clippings from Alderman Dan Cohen, Gene Wilson, and Mayor Nafflin concerning a free trip that Gene Wilson and his wife received from a bar owner. This was part of a excursion that the bar apparently sponsored, and as a result of filling their quota of people going on the trip, apparently free tickets were issued, and the bar owner allowed Gene Wilson to use these. Alderman Dan Cohen called the attention about this, and it was all part of some political infighting again, and it got quite nasty. Alderman Dan Cohen has been hitting at Nafflin through me, and comments about the police department and so forth for a long time. I have very little respect for Dan Cohen, and He is a very nasty individual, according to stories passed around in City Hall concerning his help, relatives and others, and his comments about them. He was a pain in the neck to me, and actually I was afraid of what might happen if I ever met him in the tunnel between City Hall and the garage where my car was parked. I'm sure I would have said something, and I hope that I wouldn't have become physical, but a person never knows. He was a very arrogant, nasty individual, in my opinion, and opinion of many others from talk heard around City Hall. Eventually, Gene Wilson was cleared in district court by Judge Weeks, and threatened lawsuits by Wilson against Ann Cohen, and Ann Cohen's lawsuit or complaint against Wilson was dropped by both parties, and the incident apparently was closed. About this same time, Gene Wilson had been at the top of the list for uniform captain, and he apparently became disgusted with all the complaints and the heat he was getting as head of the moral squad from outsiders, not so much from within the department, though I was constantly on him and his men to perform and clean up the city and is best that could be done at that time. And he was he took the promotion and became the captain at the Bryant Precinct station. In scrapbook 5 on page 81, there is an article headline: Police Chiefs Say Public Is Top Problem. This concerns an article in the FBI Law Enforcement Bulletin, which is on page 85 in scrapbook 5, in which many of the chiefs from the top population centers around the country were quoted and asked for their opinions on law enforcement generally in the country. The article in the FBI Law Enforcement Bulletin, there were a series of questions asked of all the police chiefs, and comments, answers to the question by the various law enforcement officials in the survey, and I'm quoted in this article also. The questions asked were: question number one, what is the most crucial problem facing law enforcement in the United States today? And B, what are the major obstacles in resolving this problem, and what positive actions can police officials take to overcome these obstacles? Question number two, in your opinion, can the American public expect a leveling off or perhaps a reduction in crime in the near future, and explain? Question number three, name and discuss the most important single contribution law-abiding citizen could make to help fight crime in your area. And question number four, what recruiting techniques have you found most worthwhile in attracting qualified applicants to your department? Question number five, a lot has been said about the lack of respect for law and order. This is an increasing problem for your department. If so, name some of the causes as you see them. Question 6. Have baseless allegations of police brutality hampered the efficiency and productivity of your force? Could you give some reasons or points in support of your answer? Question number 7. Do you feel that civil disobedience has been, or if continued on a wide scale, will be an influencing factor in increasing crime picture? Question number 8. In your opinion, do court decisions which tend to favor the criminal at the expense of the public and actions by jurists who appear to search for error rather than the truth have any bearing on criminal activities and the enforcement of the law? Question number 9. Do courts, civil authorities, and news media, civic groups, and citizens in your area show any great concern over the increasing assaults and attacks against police officers? Question 10. Do officers in your department generally find the law on arrest, search, and interrogation reasonably clear on what it demands of an officer and what it permits him to do? Question 11. A. Is there or is there not a substantial fear among officers of civil suit damages resulting from illegal arrest and unreasonable search? And B. If the answer to A is yes, does the fear sometimes result in officers doing nothing under circumstances in which they formerly would have acted? Question number 12. What do you think the state of law and order in our nation will be 10 years from now if there are no material changes in conditions affecting law enforcement as they exist today? Question number 13. Is the easy accessibility of firearms a serious problem in your area? If so, do you have any observations on what action is needed to overcome the problem? Question 14. Comment on any other issue not covered in the above questions which you consider vital to law enforcement. That is the series of questions that was asked each individual in the survey. On through the article and highlighted my answers to the various questions as I was quoted in the article. Looking at my answers, I feel that even at this time and date, October of 1995, I feel the answers are still applicable to conditions nowadays, and I think some of my answers actually have come true and are legitimate and pertinent to the present day. Time will tell. Scrapbook 5 on page 86, there are some articles concerning the appointment of a new head of the Morrill Squad. Appointed was James O'Meara, a 5-year veteran of the department, and he had spent 3 years in charge of, working for the Morrill Squad, and his leadership and ability there was apparent. And I had conducted interviews with a number of people wanting to know whether they wanted to be appointed and some of them turned me down, others weren't interested, and so I stayed within the Morrill Squad and appointed James O'Meara. Since I was appointed chief, the Morrill Squad has been doing an excellent job and has cleaned up and run out of town most of the prostitutes that were formerly walking the streets and in evidence around town. At the time I left the department in 1968, we were down to a few girls hanging around the Copper Squirrel. very few or none on the streets, and possibly call girl operations, but none known to us in the police department. Call girl operations are very difficult to nail because of the way they operate, and it's difficult to get the evidence on them. But the city was comparatively vice-free. There were no porno shops, massage parlors, or anything like that that cropped up later on, mainly because of a change in some court decision that made it easier for those places, types of places, to operate. But on the whole, I was very pleased with the way the city had been cleaned up, and I feel even at this date in October of 19. 19-